Mr. Clovis said, "It's a little surprise. We have a special pet. We don't show just anyone. Big Mama is her name." "What kind of pet?" Violet's heart beat quickly. "Not your ordinary pet." Out of his pocket, Mr. Clovis took a key to unlock an unusually heavy door that looked as if it were reinforced with steel. When he led Violet into the room beyond, Rita Mae and the others followed close behind, and the door was shut behind them. "Big Mama, look who's here! Violet, our new friend!" At first, Violet couldn't make out what the thing, the creature, was on the other side of a glass barrier. Was it a snake? A huge snake? The largest snake she had ever seen, even in photographs. "Of course it's a true story, Whately. Would Black Cthulhu, who slimed out of the dark stars when your most eldritch nightmares were suckling at their mother's pseudo-mammaria, who waits for the time that the stars come forth from his tomb palace, revive the faithful and resume his rule, who waits to teach anew the high and luscious pleasures of death and revelry, would he lie to you?" Sure I would. Shut up, Whately, I'm talking. The decade following establishment of the permanent Indian frontier was a bad time for the Eastern tribes. The great Cherokee Nation had survived more than 100 years of the white man's wars, diseases, and whiskey, but now it was to be blotted out. Because the Cherokees numbered several thousands, their removal to the West was planned to be in gradual stages. But discovery of Appalachian gold within their territory brought on a clamor for their immediate wholesale exodus. "You don't honestly think I'm going to write your paper for you, do you?"
"Why not?"
"Well, I mean, Eric, I'm a famous writer. I have a novel under contract with Viking Penguin. You know, Viking Penguin, that gigantic publisher, the same one that published Daisy Miller. And they're paying me a lot of money to write this novel. On top of which, what you're proposing, it's unethical. It goes against everything I believe in."
"Yeah, if I were asking you to make up the ideas, but I'm not. You can use my ideas. I'm just asking you to put the sentences together."
He stubbed out the joint.
"Shit, you're a really good writer, Dave. I'll bet you never got less than an A on a paper in your life, did you? Did you?"
Only one thing finally solves the problem, but nobody wants to hear about it. Think about the man in the glider. Would we really want to be up there? From the very beginning, he doesn't have a chance. He's just there for the ride, the greatest ride in the world. Our own lives are like a ride, which inevitably ends in our death. We're trying to do the impossible, to save ourselves. We can't do that. In fact, we're all dying right now. How many minutes do we have? Like the glider, perhaps we have just 1 minute, perhaps 100 minutes. It doesn't matter which. In the end, we're going down. But the one who can answer what is the meaning of life is the glider pilot, not the airplane pilot. The glider pilot will know before he crashes, and he will probably crash with wow. Here was the doorway leading into the hall where Mama had died. Her blood had long since faded to a barely discernible pattern of streaks and splatters on the wall, not much darker than the shadow and grime around it. But here and there, the wooden frame had been splintered by hammer blows that missed, and in two spots, one on either side of the door, Mama's fingers had dug into the wall hard enough to leave gouges in the plaster. That must have happened when Bobby didn't miss. "And when beetles fight these battles in a bottle with their paddles and the bottles on a poodle and the poodles eating noodles, they call this a muddle puddle tweedle poodle beetle noodle bottle paddle battle. And now wait a minute, Mr. Sox Fox. When a fox is in the bottle where the tweedle beetles battle with their paddles in a puddle on a noodle eating poodle, this is what they call a tweedle beetle noodle poodle bottle paddled muddle duddle fuddled waddled fox in socks. Sir."